Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. David French of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis. Probably more accurately, good, bad, and bad. Just a pretty news-filled weekend, David. Usually the weekends are the quiet times in the news cycle. Not so far in the Trump administration. I have a feeling that pattern may continue as we go along here as the media continues to go apoplectic over just about everything that happens in this country. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I have to say that I probably worked more this weekend than I can remember in a long time. But as you said, it's the Trump administration where every day is a month.
That's right. Hey, he said he's going to put everybody to work. And I guess that includes people who already had jobs working even harder
exactly.
to try and keep up with him. But let's actually start with our good martini and what Donald Trump is doing today. This is courtesy of Reuters. President Donald Trump signed an order on Monday that will seek to dramatically pare back federal regulations by requiring agencies to cut two existing regulations for every new rule introduced. Quote, "This will be the biggest such act that our country has ever seen. There will be regulation, there will be control, but it will be normalized control," Trump said as he signed the order in the Oval Office surrounded by a group of small business owners. Trump's latest executive action will prepare a process for the White House to set an annual cap on the cost of new regulations for the rest of fiscal 2017. That cap on new regulations would be $0, the official said on customary condition of anonymity. So, David, for the most part, I love this, obviously. The government has gotten way too regulation happy. It's good to see Trump with the instinct to cut this back and let American individuals and American businesses flourish. I think he should just get rid of the ones that he doesn't like and thinks that are counterproductive to American business and aren't necessary, and not have to wait for a new one to be proposed before you cut to. But he's headed in the right direction here, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a blunt instrument. I'm not exactly sure how it'll work in real life. What you might end up doing is somebody then drafts one regulation that then encompasses the scope of the two that are pulled back.
Mm.
So it's more, I think, of a statement of intent than anything else. Look, and it's good intent. I mean, the notion that we need to rein in this unbelievably vast and growing bureaucracy that is beginning to micromanage our lives in a way that's largely immune from the democratic process. I think that is solid. And where we're really going to start to do that is if we're able to see, or if the House and Senate are able to pass the RAINS Act. What the RAINS Act will do is something far more important than an executive order. It will put Congress back in charge of the lawmaking process by making Congress approve of any regulation of more than $100 million of economic impact. And that's when you're going to really start to see some change, because Congress has just flat out abdicated in many ways its lawmaking authority and delegated it to these executive branch agencies.
Yeah, I think party has superseded constitutional parameters for both parties. If they like what the president's doing, they're perfectly okay with him doing it
right
on his own. If not, then of course they find their pocket copies of the Constitution, blow the dust off it, and and talk about how horrified they are, I guess.
Just more broadly, I'm glad to see an explosion in interest in the Constitution on the left side of the aisle in the first week or so of the Trump administration. So, you know, maybe between 8 years of Obama and however many years of Trump, both sides will eventually rediscover the Constitution. But I'm not holding my breath.
No, they'll forget again once the circumstances change. And let's talk about the very full bad martini now here. And in some ways, the premise of this executive order, I think a lot of conservatives will find good. Donald Trump has talked about the refugee program before. Republicans in Congress in the past couple of years have talked about trying to do a better job of vetting refugees, whether it's from Syria or anywhere else, because there's just not the records on a lot of these people. And so we're kind of taking them at their word. And we see what's happening in some of the Western European nations. And it's not good, as Trump might say. And so we want to make sure that the same thing doesn't happen here. Donald Trump's executive order essentially says that there is going to be, I believe, a 90-day pause on refugees being brought in, or anybody from 7 different nations that have a terrorism problem. As a result of the imminent implementation A number of people got caught up in transit after they'd received their green card. And we got a lot of problems at various airports, which led to protests from the left at various airports. And, of course, that ultimately led to a lot of political grandstanding, because why wouldn't it? First of all, there were the tears of Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
This executive order was mean-spirited and un-American. It was implemented in a way that created chaos and confusion across the country, and it will only serve to embolden and inspire those around the globe who will do us harm.
Not to be outdone, Fareed Zakaria saying Americans, and Trump in particular, are just fearful.
Trump has always trafficked in fear-mongering. This time, to stoke those fears and present himself as the country's protector, he chose to punish ordinary men, women, and children who are fleeing terrorism and violence, who are willing to brave the odds, bear the hardships, and separate from family and home, all to try to come to America. These people are the roadkill of Trump's posturing. But something else is being destroyed along with it: the image, reputation, and goodwill of the United States as the beacon of the world. As someone noted over the past few days, Donald Trump seems to want to turn off that lamp on the Statue of Liberty.
So, David, Hollywood had another award show last night congratulating themselves, because that's what they do best. And a lot of the actors went off on tangents on this policy as well. So a couple different ways to look at this. First of all, on the Trump executive order, was it a bad policy or poor execution as you see it?
It was poor execution over the weekend. I think no question about that. As far as the policy itself, I mean, the reaction here is so overwrought. I mean, let's look at what happened here. Number one, on refugees, there's a four-month pause to revamp security procedures. And then he's going to let in refugees at the rate of 50,000 a year, which is slightly above the average rate in the Bush administration and just slightly below the average rate in the Obama administration until last year, when he dramatically increased the number. So for 15 of the last 16 years, 50,000 would not be significantly out of line one way or the other in the amount of refugees. So, you know, the Statue of Liberty weeping tweets that you saw, I mean, the Statue of Liberty must have been weeping for 15 of the last 16 years. I mean, in after 9/11, the number of refugees plunged to around 23, 24,000, less than half of the number that Trump is wanting to let in. So now, as far as the pause goes, guess who put a refugee pause in place for six whole months on refugees coming from Iraq, which is one of the countries that sends a lot of refugees in our direction? Barack Obama. He put in a six-month pause, and one that was so draconian that there are reports that an American interpreter who worked with American forces overseas was assassinated while waiting for Obama to lift the pause. So, again, refugee pause and refugee numbers are not, and limits on refugee numbers are not unprecedented at all in the last two administrations. Then when you go to the seven countries where there's a 90-day ban, while we take a look at security proceedings, those seven countries were identified by, drumroll please, the Obama administration in 2015 and 2016 as countries of particular concern because of the jihadist influence. So again, this is not out of line with prior practice. So the actual substance of the executive order, to me, seems quite reasonable. Now, the implementation, oh man. The idea, you know, it could have been implemented so much easier if you just say green card holders who've been completely vetted already are not covered by this order. Those in transit who've already received their visas are actually on their way to the U.S. and approved interpreters and other allies from overseas who've risked their lives for American soldiers, all those people, they're in. At that point, the implementation is much smoother. Also, there should have been more consultation and warning to our allies. This was rushed out when just a few days of more thought, more cooperation, more communication would have made a world of difference. And so that's why governing is hard. I mean, you have an idea. Your idea may be solid, but you have to implement it. It's idea and implementation. It's not just idea.
Certainly the case. And a couple different things pop into mind here. First of all, at least some on the left, whether it's their honest opinion or whether they're just reacting this way because it's a Republican president or specifically Trump, this idea that somehow the rest of the world has a fundamental right to live here and move here without our okay, I don't know where they get that from, David.
Well, you know, and it's particularly galling when you consider the Obama administration's policies. So, for example, for the first few years, of the Syrian civil war, when millions of people were being displaced from their home and refugees were streaming across Syrian borders, do you know how many Syrian refugees the Obama administration led into the United States? Less than 200. Less than 200. And so, you know, where was all the rhetoric about the Statue of Liberty weeping then? No, there are ways to be compassionate that don't involve giving anyone and everyone a right to enter your own country. But look, at this point, as we've seen, the hatred for Trump is so high, is so off the charts, that anything that he does, whether there's an element of it that can be criticized legitimately or not, is the rhetoric is going to just go to 11 on it. It's we've seen that again and again. And so words like Muslim ban were thrown around willy-nilly when there's no Muslim ban in this executive order. It does not exist. You can read it 50 times and you will not see a Muslim ban. But we've just gone everything, you know, to that reference to the movie Spinal Tap, the volume goes to 11.
And David, I know things move fast here in the Trump administration, but just a week ago, we had, I don't know how many thousands or hundreds of thousands of women horrifically offended at the fact that Republicans might try to defund Planned Parenthood, yet now they're in favor and defending people who, let's just say, would have slightly less interest in extending women's rights.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, when we're talking about these kinds of issues, consistency is hard to find. I mean, look, you know, when we're talking about the one thing that's lost in this debate and what I've heard no one really grapple with is if you look since the rise of ISIS in summer and fall of 2014, when it really burst on the scene, the number of terrorist plots in the U.S. Tripled the annual rate over the previous 13 years since 9/11, tripled the number of terrorist plots. And those are just the ones we know of where there have been either actual attacks or arrests in connection with planned attacks. So we have a problem. We do. All these people who are out there minimizing the danger, you know, look, you're entitled to your own opinion and you're not entitled to your own facts, and we've got a problem. Is it so wrong to take 90 days, 3 months to think about it and to consider whether we need better immigration controls? You know, that's what's just getting me is that level of hysteria over that issue is, you know, it's far out of proportion to what Trump did.
They still can't handle the fact that he won. It's just that simple. I mean, there's a lot of people that weren't necessarily thrilled, but you just deal with the reality. There are millions and millions of people who are very loud who just simply cannot accept reality at this point. And right now, there's not a lot of indication that they have any ability to do so anytime soon. But as an exit on the second martini here, David, touche from the Iraqis. The AP reports about 5 hours ago, breaking lawmakers. Iraq parliament approves reciprocity measure after Trump's travel ban to apply for Americans entering Iraq. Take that. We can't go to Iraq now, David. That changes our plans for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, you know, there's not much of a tourist trade from America to Iraq right now. But I will say, you know, we do have American contractors that go to help American forces and help Iraqi forces. So this isn't inconsequential. And again, this goes to roll out. If you had bothered to reach out to our Iraqi allies, discuss the intention, discuss how it would be implemented, discuss the reasons, and do some damage control on the front end, maybe you don't have this. We cannot act like the governing world is just in the world of ideas. And if you have a good idea, then that good idea means that you're a good governor. No, it's ideas and implementation. And in National Review editorial, we essentially made that point that the ideas were solid, the implementation was botched.
Yeah, excellent way to put it. Let's move on to the second bad, maybe slightly crazy martini here. This was breaking less than an hour ago as we record here late on Monday morning Eastern Time. Brett Baer from Fox News reporting on Twitter, quote, Fox News learns Iran conducted ballistic missile launch Sunday in apparent violation of UN resolution. He later retweeted a Fox News research tweet that said Iran has now tested or attempted to test ballistic missiles five times since January 2016, despite a UN resolution against such tests. So, shock of all shocks, David, the Iranians are not playing by the rules. And perhaps even saddest of all, it's not a violation of the Iran nuclear deal because we didn't insist on them not testing and using ballistic missiles.
Right. It's a violation of UN resolutions, but not the nuclear deal. Look, this is Iran saying, welcome to the Oval Office, President Trump. What are you going to do about us? The world comes at you fast, and this is yet another example that, you know, look, a lot of people sometimes have these hopes that you just put a different person in the Oval Office and their mere presence or reputation is going to change things. You know, that was the Obama hope. Hey, look, I'm not George W. Bush. I am somebody who is, far more sensitive and far more progressive than he is. I'm going to turn the page on his policies. So, you know, you need to start liking America now. And the jihadist threat just grew and grew. I think there were a lot of people who thought or who argued, well, President Trump, he's tough. Nobody's going to want to cross President Trump. He's talked tough on the campaign trail. He doesn't take anything from anybody. And Iran's testing that days into his administration. So, the world is a dangerous place, and jihadist regimes like Iran have seen many American presidents come and go, and have proceeded, and have been our enemy throughout the process. Iran is a difficult problem to deal with, and we'll see how President Trump responds.
I realize predicting what Trump might do has bankrupted a lot of people in the last couple of years, but any idea what you think he might do in response to something like this?
Well, one of the things that he can do is impose sanctions for this particular act of, Iran did not violate the nuclear deal, as you noted, that was not included as part of the nuclear deal. But that doesn't mean that we can't take actions to sanction Iran. The problem that we have is once you unwind a sanctions regime, as the Obama administration did, it's really difficult to reconstruct it. America may try to sanction, but if Europe doesn't, sanctions against Iran will be relatively ineffective. I mean, this is part of the legacy of the Obama-Iran deal and the normalization of relations with Iran. It's really hard to reconstitute effective international sanctions regimes.
Well, David, like you said earlier, the Trump administration has stuff coming at us fast and furious, and a lot of it of what we talked about was just breaking this morning. So thank you, as always, for your time the past couple of episodes, and we look forward to visiting with you soon.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure, and I know y'all are looking forward to Jim coming back.
David French of National Review in for Jim Garrity. As David mentioned, Jim will be back on Tuesday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and be sure to tune in on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.